Kristen here with Brett Ehrlich and Ambria Allen. Excited for this hour. We have some, I think some good stories. The first one, I mean, I think after last night, I think we're all feeling like a little pep in our step. We're all feeling a little bit more hopeful, a little bit more excited. So I have some hopeful stories, but then of course, like we're still in the era of Trump. So there are some other stories that might depress you.
You gotta take the bitter with the sweet.
Yes.
You know?
What a beautiful statement.
Oh, I made that up.
I made that 1920s of you.
From Brett Ehrlich here on the Young Turks.
I'd also like to add, have no idea what time it is. I took an early flight this morning, fell asleep, woke up, no hot water, showered at the gym. Oh. We'll see how this goes.
Oh. Where did you come from?
I was in Las Vegas.
Oh.
Stayed at the Mandalay.
I feel like this is like the third time I've seen you in Las Vegas like this week.
Yeah, I was in Las Vegas. I stayed at the Mandalay Bay. I thought it was interesting. They sent an email to me because I have like a gambling app on my phone, but they're like saying we encourage you to support us by coming and accepting
and
two free nights at the Mandalay Bay. So I had
the app. How much do you actually gamble?
Oh, no money. It's actually more depressing because
when the place is sending you free trips to come, you must gamble a lot.
Well, they give you what they do is they give you loyalty points for playing it, and it costs no money to play. But it's sad how many loyalty points I have for the amount of time I've spent playing a fake slot machine app on my phone. But I went and I had one of those rooms overlooking like the actual site of the shooting, and it was super eerie.
Yeah,
and I wanted to see like how security's changed in Las Vegas, and so we went there and saw that, and they have people seated outside of the elevator stairwells, making sure that they see you go into the elevator.
Sure.
And report any suspicious activity. Also, they just changed a policy more that says if you for more than 3 days have a do not disturb sign on your room, they will disturb you.
Wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's at that particular hotel. I wonder if it's like
widespread. It's widespread. Steve Wynn showed up and said, listen, I've been doing this for a long time. He was all over the news, making local news appearances about that.
But interesting.
It's a really eerie way, you know, place to look out over all that. It was really, really creepy. They still have the street. The scene is locked down. There's always police there, and you can always see the.
Sure.
There's a lot of Vegas Strong t-shirts and whatnot. But
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Reporting live too late from Las Vegas.
Seriously. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's 4.
It's 4 p.m. Good.
It's 4 p.m.
I made it on time.
And now let's jump into our first story.
Indeed, we will.
Last night's election result yielded a wave of firsts and a pretty big progressive shift, including the first elected openly transgender person. Now you're seeing here a picture of Danica Rome, who won a pretty big election and won by nearly 9 percentage points. Okay, with all precincts reporting, she went against Robert Marshall, who's a 13-term incumbent, okay? So this is a huge win for her. She outraised Marshall 3-1 with nearly $500,000 in donations, much of it coming from LGBT advocates and other supporters across the country. And this is a huge point that I want to really, really get into because Marshall had a huge anti-LGBTQ plus history. I mean, he introduced this anti-trans bathroom bill. He actually called himself chief homophobe. Okay, he called himself that. And throughout the entire election, he refused to acknowledge Danica as a woman. He refused to use her pronouns. He refused to debate her and referred to her as male pronouns, like I said, the entire time. But she came back against him super strong. She raised all the money. Her campaign knocked on doors more than 75,000 times in a district with 52,000 registered voters. And she went to a bunch of public appearances and interviews and maintained a steady social media presence. Whereas Marshall didn't do the same. And look what happened. I mean, she won by 9 percentage points, which is a huge, huge win. And not only a huge win for her, but also I think for the transgender community. I mean, I've been seeing tweets about parents of you know, transgender kids who are talking about the importance of representation and seeing, you know, somebody who can be an elected official being openly transgender. And so I think this is a really, really huge win for the LGBTQ plus community. Not to mention, we also witnessed the first openly trans woman of color, Andrea Jenkins, who won a seat on the Minneapolis City Council. 72% of voters picked her as their first choice for the city council position. So she won by a landslide. Now, obviously, these are the first openly transgender woman to take a seat and the first openly transgender woman of color. But there is a history of trailblazers that I want to mention. Now, Stacey Lawton was the first openly transgender woman to win a seat on the state legislature in a 2012 New Hampshire race, but she had never actually took office. Now, Althea Garrison was a transgender woman who served a term in the Massachusetts state legislature, but she did not run as an openly transgender person. So there's where the distinction is. Like I said, Tuesday night was a complete night of firsts. So I'm just gonna run through a few of the firsts. There's a ton of them. I'm gonna run through a few of them for you. Joyce Craig became the first female mayor of Manchester, the largest city in New Hampshire. Jen Durkin was the city's first, or Seattle's first openly lesbian woman to be mayor. New Jersey elected its first Sikh mayor on Tuesday night, Ravi Bala. Wilmot Collins became Montana's first black mayor. And Melvin Carter became the first black mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota. Kathy Tran, who is a former Vietnamese refugee, became the first Asian American woman to join Virginia's House of Delegates. The list goes on and on. I mean, I had a huge stack of papers talking about all the firsts that were accomplished last night. And this is amazing because we are seeing this huge progressive shift. And this is the retaliation. This is the resistance in the Trump era.
Yeah, Virginia is for lovers, haters back off. Like that, I mean, that the one you led with is a story of just epic proportions when you start unpacking it. Yeah. You have a 13-term incumbent in races like this. It is so, the incumbent moniker is one that is so difficult to take from someone. It is so, it's nearly impossible. I don't know what it is lately, but like, for years and years, it's like a 90% incumbent success rate across the board, especially in smaller, lower, you know, profile races. So that was amazing, and this, a lot of them are taking place in Virginia. So you have the president or the governor of Virginia, and it goes all the way down. It was that down ballot voting at work. So all the stuff everyone was saying about turn out the vote, go to the polls, and remember to vote down ballot. That paid off huge.
Yeah, I think it is as much as it is exciting, it is kind of like interesting that in America, this bastion of diversity and meritocracy, that we have so many firsts like this. It's like, whoa, these are the first black mayors that we've had. These are the first in city, you know, so it's exciting. It's interesting. It's a referendum on Trump and Trumpism as it's been labeled. But I also think folks are electing folks who respond to the local issues, right? So while you have these incumbents who are playing identity politics, who are centering this trans woman's identity, she's responding to the issues that the voters are responding to. And I think that is what wins. And I think that's what the larger Democratic Party can learn from this election in particular, is you need to speak to, you know, the constituents.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point, because I feel like conservatives often say that, you know, liberals and Democrats are always playing sort of identity politics and kind of claiming that. And he was the one, and Marshall was the one in this case, who was attacking, you know, he put out ads attacking her on being transgender and saying, wait, she's not really a woman. What does her birth certificate say? And all these sorts of things. And she's like, well, and she put out a sort of a counter ad saying, yeah, I take hormone pills, like this is who I am, but we're all humans at the end of the day. And I think, you know, in this day and age, being human and having sort of that underlying message of empathy is something that is, you know, clearly by last night, something that is really important and something that's really resonating with people who may be turned off by this sort of Trumpism and realize that you do need to go out and vote because bad things can happen.
And if you ask Danica, she says, like, I didn't like the traffic problem.
There are issues, yeah.
And everyone in the area was like, it takes 2 hours to get to work. Yeah. And that is local politics. And you have a traffic problem. I know my commute to work was disturbed by a slight repainting of the lines. Mm-hmm. And there are all along, like, replace Bonin. You hate the traffic, replace Councilman Bonin. And so that is exactly the kind of stuff, and an amazing way to go at handling two huge things. One, the identity politics concept that everyone's talking about lately. And you had a 13-term incumbent who said, it's enough for me just to say that this person's a freak and this is my job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Danica said very tactfully, very effectively, like, okay, I am this person. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. Let's fix the traffic.
Yeah.
She ran on traffic and Medicaid expansion. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I think in this particular instance, when you mentioned these former candidates who were also trans women were not out, right? They weren't openly trans. Mm-hmm. They were outed, right? So then you have someone who is openly trans, right? And then her identity is still centered. So it's like there's no way around the identity politics being done. So she's like, let's galvanize people around these issues, right? Which is what we should be talking about.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's important that all of these issues were brought up. I also think, like, I'll mention again that at the core of this, I think representation is huge, right? When little kids can see that elected officials, regardless of whether they're facing any sort of bigotry or, I mean, you know, trans children have like the highest suicide rate and things like that, seeing somebody sort of sidestep essentially all that sort of hateful rhetoric and bigotry and, you know, unseat this incumbent is huge. And not to mention congratulations, obviously, to all of the other, you know, Democratic winners last night.
Right. There's also some sad but true things that are still at work that luckily went in the favor of the Democratic candidate. The fact that she was able to outraise 3-1 and have 3-1 that kind of money to spend. That doesn't happen all the time. Like, I still think the focus should be to try to get money out of politics. But it was important for people to, in the system that we have, go and find ways to donate to the candidates that you think can make a difference. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. I will point out the referendum in Maine is really, really important. That was a referendum on Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. So far, there had been kind of like a buffer between polls where you hear people say, like, yes, please expand Medicaid. We want more people to have access to healthcare. And then a bunch of legislative hurdles and this weird, actually, we have a gerrymandered districts, which lead to Republican legislatures or a Republican governor who's able to have a better campaign and get the governorship. But we had a situation here where people said, no, here is a vote. Right. We need to have Medicaid expansion, and the governor's still giving them crap about it, saying he's not going to make it happen until they can fund it. But this is one of those things where people are going to the polls and saying, we want this, make it happen.
Yeah, and that's huge, right? People going to the polls and making, like, first of all, voting in general, right? And being informed and voting and all of that stuff is so, so important. But there's so many of these stories, too, where you hear of, you know, somebody was upset by a comment one of their lawmakers made, or they witnessed something, and so then they decided to run themselves. And I think that's important, too, for all of the young people who are watching, to one, vote, but two, like, you have the power, too, to run and make a change yourself. And I think that is a huge movement that we're seeing with young people, with progressives, and so I'm happy that we saw it in this election, and I'd like to see it in elections to come. All right, moving on. Mariah Carey has been accused of sexual harassment by her former security guard. Now, Michael Anello, who is the CEO of Los Angeles-based Anello Security and Consulting, is actually threatening to sue Carey for unpaid bills in excess of $220,000 for work undertaken between June 2015 and May 2017. Further, a draft lawsuit that was obtained by TMZ, prepared by Anello's lawyer, alleges sexual and verbal harassment, including calling him a skinhead, among other slurs. He alleges on one occasion she was wearing a sheer negligee. And Anello said that he tried to excuse himself, but Carrie insisted that he move the luggage that he was moving at the time in her room. And then he left the room. So obviously these are all allegations that are happening right now. And I think in the midst of all of the Harvey Weinstein sort of fallout and all of these other famous people in Hollywood being, you know, sort of brought down by sexual harassment and sexual abuse claims and allegations, this is adding to the list with a little bit of a twist, right? Oftentimes, in a lot of these cases, we've seen women accusing men of these actions, and now this sort of flips the table. What do you guys think about this?
Go for it. I feel like I jump in like immediately.
No, go ahead.
If you're sexually harassing people, I think the accusation should come forward and we should investigate it and find out who it is, regardless of the gender of the person who's, you know, perpetrating allegedly this sexual harassment.
Yeah, I think some of the claims are going to need to be a little bit more specific. Mariah Carey is always in a negligee. I've never not.
He watched her music video.
Yeah, I've never not seen her almost naked. So, it's probably also the laziest sexual harassment that based on her performances. It's got to be really bad. But yeah, again, harassment of any form has to be taken seriously. Folks need to come forward. He needs to file this so it can be further investigated.
Yes. I agree with you guys, right? Like, it's very important to recognize that sexual harassment and sexual abuse happens to men too. And I think that is an important sort of nuance to a lot of the allegations that we're seeing in the media right now. That said, there's a lot going on here. He's unpaid. He is saying that she's racist. One of the things that he said was that she was racist because she wanted to be surrounded by black guys and not white people. First of all, reverse racism, not a thing. Okay, so that's like the first thing.
Understand that. I don't understand what that means. Like, what does reverse racism, not a thing, mean?
Yeah, so when you were talking about like an ism, right? Okay, so like sexism, racism, whatever it is, you're looking at, and you can do a better job at this because you're a sociologist, but you're often looking at like the oppressor and oppressed historically. You're looking at historical context and things like that. And so when you look at that dynamic and the systemic problems, right? There's gonna be individual biases and stereotypes and things like that. But when you're looking at it on a systemic level, you can't, like, the oppressed can't be racist or sexist against the oppressor.
But what if she's like, I hate white people because they're just inherently inferior to me, so I don't want them around me.
Right, like I said, there can be sort of like an individual that can feel that way, but it's not like the whole racism because it's not a systemic problem.
I get what you're saying. I think those words, yeah, I get it. You have to take into consideration the historical legacy of oppression systems that have been happening since slavery, you know. But it's like, if she's being racist toward white people, like, she can be racist toward white people, right? I can be, you know, I as a Jew can be racist toward people who have oppressed me in the past.
Yeah, I think it's just the way we're using these terms.
Yeah.
I think that's, we get caught up in how we, you know, kind of semantics around these things. She's, you know, displaying bigoted behavior. She's saying things that are racist. She may be discriminating in this particular case because it is the workplace.
Right.
Which I think gets problematic because you should exert some kind of control over who is hired. If you do have that issue, then why is it on display in these kind of interpersonal interactions when he's an assistant, a bodyguard?
A bodyguard.
Okay, yeah. Then you exert some control over who is being hired. Not to say that she's not just openly discriminating by not actively hiring white people. I don't know. And I feel like her ethnicity is also kind of ambiguous. So this is all just kind of like an interesting case. In any light, I think all forms of discrimination or harassment need to be investigated and taken seriously. It's just a little nebulous here as to kind of what has happened. And I think that's why it's just a little tricky to kind of suss out.
Right. And he crime. It seems like there's an act and an intent. There's a way that, you know, you could be in a room with Mariah Carey and she's in revealing outfits and it's the, you know, the stage at the Grammys. And there's one where she is in a revealing outfit and she is intentionally making you feel awkward and powerless when she's making you come in and take her luggage away when you obviously have said that this makes you feel uncomfortable and it's not part of your job and it shouldn't be part of your job.
Right. I agree with you. And there's other allegations that I read and from different sources, one of which saying that she was partaking in sexual activity with somebody and he was felt like she was making sure that he witnessed it.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Well, I mean, you're also a security guard. And if you're standing outside of a room or standing outside of somewhere to protect somebody, I don't know where the lines are. I don't know what happened, right? Because this is all just sort of coming out right now. And so I think there's a lot that we still need to look into. That said, I think this is an important story because sexual harassment obviously can happen to men too, as we've seen in the Kevin Spacey allegations and now potentially in the Mariah Carey allegations.
And I think it's interesting because it's another case, you know, although not as clear as how do you maintain professionalism in these informal professional spaces? And I think we've got to start to figure out how to carve out boundaries that are clear because this isn't a formal office space, right? This is your security guard. So they do kind of traverse the boundaries of kind of interpersonal interactions, right? They are there when you're changing or possibly sleeping with someone. So then how do you define what harassment is?
It sounds like there's a, I guess it probably happens in Game of Thrones, but I remember there was a show called Rome where like she's having sex and all her guards are standing around in a circle. That's what it seems like, this archaic, terrifying, like medieval situation. I will say that I am glad that Hollywood is changing. I was an assistant at a talent agency and I always worked for really great people, but you'd be on the phone like, you just are listening into everyone's conversations in case you need to send a package or something. Then you see it, you hear it, just like terrifying things happen on the phone. And you hear stories from other assistants working at other places. And I talked to various people throughout the industry and they've said that times have changed. They know that this is happening and HR departments exist now, whereas before it was just like the person who signed your check and there wasn't a real fully developed HR department you could go to. And I heard of one story where it wasn't like in my day, you'd hear these things about like, what are you wearing? Kind of text going to assistants and whatnot and saying really untoward, horrible, horrible things. And then I heard one story about someone who just sent one text that was more about like, where are you right now? Which could be a bunch of things, but it was after hours. And as an assistant after hours, you'd always get called to go make a delivery at like 8:30 PM on a, you know, essentially like a Friday night. You just had to do it because that was part of your job. But the ambiguity there, they were both brought in and asked to hash it out and establish those boundaries, which is a very responsible step that just I don't remember exactly happening 15 years ago.
And I think that's really important to kind of piggyback off what you're saying and to address what you said, Ambria, is I do think that it's really important to really define what sexual harassment is, what sexual abuse is, and sexual assault and all of those things. Because even though we shouldn't have to, like we should know what this looks like, I think right now it does seem like a little bit nebulous. We don't know how to do it in sort of different scenarios when it's the interpersonal and you have business sort of mixing or you're doing late night deliveries and you don't know how to interpret text or whatever it may be. There is a lot, I think there's a lot of confusion. And even though maybe there shouldn't be, I still think that it exists. And so let's define it. You know what I mean? Break it down to like, this is every little thing right here is considered sexual harassment. This is sexual assault. This is sexual abuse. Like, I think we really, really need to be very, very specific so that people, I don't think anybody want, I mean, except for some of the biggest offenders, I think people like, if there's more like seemingly innocuous offenders, I think nobody really wants to be creepy or nobody wants to be harassing or and things like.
I don't know.
I think there's some people out there, but I think for like your everyday, you know, sort of wink at the woman and things like that, I think if you are made clear, hey, that's sexual harassment, then maybe fewer people would do it. I think. I hope.
I had the same like reaction. Like, I hear that and I want to believe it so badly, but I think that entertainment is a specific kind of industry. that you get into for the power and the coolness of it that a lot of people are drawn to for those reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all of the pure artists and the producers who are really in it to make amazing art. But there are also people that are there just to go to parties and get drunk and get chicks. Like that instinct is still out there. And
I think that exists in so, I mean, that starts in fraternities. I mean, that
it's
like,
very fratty.
Yeah, this is a pervasive issue.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I mean, there's many workplaces that are under fire now because the cocktail party got too out of control and your boss came up and said something inappropriate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just par for the course. It's like, and to your point, different people have different definitions of what they think sexual harassment or assault is, or they even base it on the kind of relationship that they think they have with their coworker, right?
That's
we're cool.
Point.
So I'm going to say something wildly inappropriate because that's Hannah. And it's like, actually, we still work together.
There should
be some boundaries.
Yeah.
So it is a dicey issue. I think particularly things may change a little more in media because of the stigma around kind of being outed, right? I think that doesn't happen so much with like regular workplaces. Like no one's wondering what FedEx is doing, but like, you know, some of these corporations or public figures were like, oh, you're harassing people? I'm not gonna watch House of Cards.
I mean, having a platform makes a huge deal.
Similar to that, I talked to a producer who's been in the town for probably 30 years. And he said that he thinks it's because the insurance companies are like, we're not gonna pay these settlements anymore.
Yeah,
like, it's all about profit.
People are getting better at it. You know, the people who you've been able to scare into submission for so long are not as frightened anymore. They're going to tell on you and they're going to have a good case because everything, whereas before it was a phone call that they made, now it's a text message and an email that they can print out and show in court. And he's just like, for whatever reason, actually gets it to happen, even if it is the insurance company, it's a good thing that this is happening.
Yeah, because not everybody has integrity.
All right, guys, we're gonna take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Trump's tweets in China and what Trump is trying to do to the Grand Canyon right now. So stick around and we'll see you in a few. Turks, Hannah, Brett, and Ambria. So let's jump into some of these TYT live tweets. Bud Askin says, election results look like a true melting pot of American culture. Seems the good old boys system has taken a slap in the face. Hell yes. I am Sock says, I get that Democrats had a big win. Let's not spike the football too hard, even though it finally felt like a good night. I think that's a really, really great point, right?
Yes.
I think that we got this little like notion of winning and you get excited about that. And I think we should be excited about that and use that as momentum to keep winning and to keep fighting. Like the fight's not over yet, guys.
Right.
We need to keep pushing and stay activated.
Act like you've been here, even though by definition, you haven't yet.
Yeah. And respond to the issues. Like that's what voters voted for. They didn't vote like according to party. They voted for candidates who responded to the traffic issues, right? To the things that respond to their particular context. So don't get ahead of yourselves. Just like keep your ear to the ground and be responsive.
But also be excited.
Yes.
But also just like a little bit. Do a little victory dance and then get back to marching. That's what I say.
Some of you dance, some of you don't.
All right, next story. Facebook is asking you to put your nudes into their database so that they can protect you from revenge porn. Because right now we seem to be in a climate where Facebook holds a lot of our trust. Now, basically what you do is you message yourself a picture of yourself naked, and it will store a fingerprint of images to prevent any copies of them being shared by disgruntled ex-lovers. Now, according to Facebook, they're not going to be storing any of the images, they're storing the link and using artificial intelligence and other photo matching technologies. Similar to when your boyfriend says, no, it's just for me. I'm not gonna show anybody. Now, how Facebook got this AI actually comes from a scandal that they faced back in March. Now, in March, Facebook was embroiled in this scandal when it emerged that a 30,000 strong private members group called Marine United was routinely sharing images of nude women. Now, the group made up of US Marines shared photographs of naked and semi-naked female colleagues. Now, in response to the revelations, Facebook introduced a feature that tagged pictures reported to it as revenge porn using photo matching technology. And it used this to prevent the image from spreading and closed down the majority of accounts reported to it as hosting such images. Now, they're going to release a trial of this new AI in Australia, where it actually is a big problem. Revenge is a big problem in Australia. 1 in 5 women aged 18 to 45 may have had some sort of image-based abuse. So they are trying to tackle that issue by asking you to send them nudes, essentially.
It's a trap. It is a total trap. It just sounds so creepy. Oh yeah, just send me. It's like it's like when you don't want a virus and you get the vaccine, you just introduce a little of the pathogen. Like, just send me some nudes.
It's like, that voice, that's terrible.
It's me, Facebook. It's me, the IT
guy.
It's
not the photo, it's the link.
No.
It's the link.
It's like someone pretending to be like a computer programmer who has only seen like parts of CSI where they're hacking. Like, yeah, that's it. And it's like, I've got
this is hacking.
Just gotta bypass the mainframe, the firewall, and the identification technology. Facebook, you can identify my face when I'm wearing like a full mask, essentially. Can you just identify boobies? And just be like, yeah, we flagged him as boobies and like Jenny's genitals.
Yeah, Jenny's, I mean, aren't you not allowed to share, like nipples aren't like allowed, that are censored on Facebook regardless, right?
I don't know.
Like, but I guess if it's in a message and then that can spread to other internet places, yeah. I guess they can like shut it down quicker. I don't know. But like, regardless of whether this works on Facebook, right? Like, if they, let's just pretend that we trust Mark Zuckerberg right now. Let's just pretend, okay? So we'll pretend that we trust him, and then he's, looking at these images, he's using these AIs, not him, the Facebook, the AI is looking at, hopefully he's not.
No, it all goes straight to Mark Zuckerberg.
His inbox.
Sheer brain power. He sits down with Priscilla and they just
Mark and Priscilla.
So let's just pretend that this AI works. And then they can prevent revenge porn and things like that. But what's not to prevent somebody from just hacking my individual Facebook account and posting it on my wall? Or like, I have a public Facebook account, and like, Hannah Cranston, here you go. You know what I mean? Like, I understand maybe not sharing
for
it.
This.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not. They're
you
not.
Never know.
No, I took my shirt off once on a set,
Brett.
And the producer said, "Is that your body?"
She's an ass.
Stop it. I don't like that. Body positivity here.
Is that your body? Is that your question to me right now?
So, revenge porn is a serious issue, and we need to find a way to clamp down on it. I don't think sending more nudes is going to fix it.
Voluntarily sending it. And like, I know that it's not this reservoir of nudes, but it just seems like, what protections do we have outside of the statement that they released that said, no, it's not the photo, it's the link, that ensures folks that this isn't being housed somewhere, and also that it's consistent? What if I change my hair? What if there are physical changes? Then how does it, how does the recognition technology then work? Is it, I don't know. I get that they're trying to take these preventative measures, but it just seems problematic.
But also, I think the problem with Facebook right now is that it hasn't defined itself, right? Like, they say that they're a social media platform. And so if they are a social media platform, maybe this makes somewhat sense, right? We're still gonna have problems with WhatsApp and Instagram and some of their other entities and things like that. But right now, it's kind of being argued that they're a media company. Would you send your nudes to a media company?
Right.
I hope not.
And a lot
you send them to my DMs, and I don't want those either.
You just assured yourself more in your DMs.
You did.
That's what's so sad. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. But a lot of these social media companies try, whenever sued, to hide behind a law that puts them kind of in the same category as the telephone company, where like if someone harasses, someone does something illegal through a telephone call, you don't sue the phone company just because they put up the wires. That's kind of how Facebook has, and others have traditionally kind of insulated themselves from any legal consequences. I like the idea that they're trying to do something, because they don't.
They need to be a little bit more proactive.
Legally have to, yeah. And And it's one of those good try. I'm sure you guys got in a meeting and there were a lot of dry erase circles and lines of good ideas. And hopefully this is when you said it out loud, you also heard how ridiculous it was. Even though, you know, we all go to meetings and come out with these great ideas that don't really fly in the real pitch. This is one of them. It's weird that it's such a small, like it's voluntary in a small group of people. Like there should be a larger policy at play and higher consequences for offenders.
Yeah. That said, if you want to send nude photos to yourself in any other sort of message just because you like your body, you go, girl.
Just be careful.
Send it to me. Send it to me.
All right, all right. Let's move on to another social media story. While in China, a country notorious for their firewall against sites like Facebook and Twitter, Trump has managed to send out some tweets. How? Well, apparently his administration says that he's using special equipment. All right, so Trump's team brought this special equipment to China that enables the president to get around the country's internet firewall. So this morning he sent out this tweet, as you can see here, you know, thanking the president of China for their hospitality, while also slapping the president in the face because he was circumventing his laws. So a little bit ironic. And often in these sort of countries that do have firewalls, and specifically China, these sort of workarounds are illegal. So he is doing something that is illegal in a different country so that he can get his Twitter on. What did you guys think when you read this story?
Trying to remember it now that I see this DT phone home graphic, which is amazing. It's really disorienting and fantastic. I asked the engineers here, the IT people, like, what would you do? And they'd be like, VPN. And that's it. Like, this special equipment is just, I'd do a VPN. Silence.
Yes. So, like, according to some articles that I read, it's basically he's using a US-based service provider, which would allow him to circumvent some of the firewalls. And so based off that information, some people who were sort of trying to guess what he was going to do when he was in China because of his penchant for tweeting, they thought maybe he would tweet while on Air Force One because they would have better access to that, not necessarily while he's walking around and hanging out in Beijing and things like that. But
you think he's going to stop doing his favorite thing just because this is his favorite part of being president?
Yes.
His favorite. He's not going to let a Chinese firewall or law stop him from being ridiculous. So he found the special equipment.
I just want to say when he's in China, don't get any ideas, dude. Literally don't get if you want to get one idea, get the like, you know, initiative toward clean energy idea, but
never.
Don't get the like severely restricted internet that only allows people to access things that the folks in charge allow them to access. I don't want to open my Twitter
That's
in the morning and just be like, it's only Trump tweets.
Yeah.
Like that is what he'd want.
We have to move.
Brett, that would never happen. It would be Trump and Fox and Friends.
Fox and Friends.
Just those two.
It's not it. There's multiple friends. I can't even do a Donald Trump voice. There's multiple friends.
He just it's just like generally like,
it's every, like, of there's like, everyone has like five impressions. It's like Woody Allen, Christopher Walken, and like, you know, George W. Bush. That I do them all at
it's
the same time.
It's a douchebag, like, cocktail.
Yeah. What's the matter? It's me, Donald Trump.
That's more.
All right. I think it's time to move on.
Yeah.
I do like when he got to the Forbidden City. He's like, they opened it just for me. Forbidden to everyone. Pulled some strings. Got in there. Forbidden City. Walls opened for Trump.
Closer.
See, it's ironic that somebody who wants to build a wall so much is trying to circumvent them.
So
little ironic, just saying.
Reports of 10 million people also do this. 10 million people
yes,
in China.
Yes, of course.
Also.
There's lots of people in China who you know get around some of the restrictive laws, which is good. Like you should have free internet access, right? It's ridiculous that China does this. That said, when you go to a foreign country, especially as a leader of another country, I think you should be somewhat respectful of their laws.
He's respectful nowhere. Remember the UN summit? You remember.
He's not like, he can't. It's true.
He also goes into these meetings and then is like, actually, they told me a few things that were kind of eye-opening. And then he changes his position completely after having a meeting with someone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a lot of people didn't know this. You hear that, like a lot of people didn't know healthcare was difficult.
No, it's because somebody draws him a stick figure like infographic and he's like, oh, now I know what you're talking about. Sorry, I was parroting Fox and Friends or Alex Jones or whomever. Mm-hmm. But once you get that, you know, those pictures in front of him and you write his name in a bunch of places.
Right. Give him some crayons.
Yeah.
And crayons, not crayons. He uses crayons.
All right, let's jump into our next story here about Notre Dame. Just 1 week after Notre Dame announced to their employees and their students that they would no longer be offering contraception coverage because they would be taking advantage of the new healthcare rules put forth by the Trump administration, they're actually rolling back some of their statements, okay? Now, on October 27th, employees and graduate students at the prominent Catholic university were told via email that the school would no longer partake in an Obama-era federal program that provided separate coverage for women's health products or procedures that the university objects to based on its religious beliefs. Now, this program was set to halt for employees by the end of this calendar year and for students in mid-August of next year. Now, there was a lot of pushback, okay? There were students who created petitions, there were students who protest. Three of Notre Dame students actually involved themselves in a pending lawsuit against the Trump administration over the new rules. And they filed that on behalf of them and the International Nonprofit Medical Students for Choice by a clinic of Yale Law School. And so all of this sort of happened, right? They made this decision saying, you know, we are not going to provide this for you anymore, which is something that they've actually been trying to fight for years. And now once the Trump administration sort of gave them the okay for any sort of institution that has a moral or religious obligation to contraceptive coverage, then they sort of took that and ran with it and sent this email, not really thinking about some of the consequences and the uprise that they would face from students and employees. Now, the latest email, which were sent to faculty on Tuesday morning and the students later in the day, said that both student and faculty insurance companies intend to continue offering coverage for birth control with no copay and that the university would not intervene. Now, I want to make it super clear, in this sort of case, the university doesn't have to provide them the birth care themselves, right? All they have to do is enable a third party to provide it for their students and for their employees. Now, what was really interesting when they made this decision last week is they said that if you need birth control for a medical condition, let's say something like PCOS or even acne or something like that, you can still get coverage for any form of birth control. But if you just want to use it for, you know, preventative pregnancy measures, then you cannot. So it's really just this sort of blatant slut shaming that they got called out for in a big way. And this again shows just the power that we have and students have when they stand up, when they protest, and when they speak out.
Yeah, I think this is the right thing to happen.
Yeah.
This is what happened, you know, you hear all these stories about how religious organizations are gonna start using that as a loophole not to have to provide coverage. But then you do it at a university where like they read and stuff and people are smart and you're gonna get the graduate school to just show up en masse and say, no, that's not gonna happen. Especially when people, it's college. People are gonna be sexually active, you're taking hormone balls, putting them right next to each other, are gonna have sex. And they want to be responsible about it, let them be responsible about it. And don't do this weird, it is fittingly like traditionally like Catholic to do like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like super weird, just be open and honest and communicate and let this happen.
Yeah, so yeah, one, thank God for grad students, right? As a grad student, like they read this. And it's like not only undergraduate students who probably don't even recognize that they have agency to affect change, right? So grad students come in who are, you know, in a period of life, they're typically, you know, older, doing family planning, right? So you can't strip people of birth control, and you certainly can't parse out, oh, if you're doing it for acne, that's fine, or if you're doing it, it's like, what? Like, it's the same medicine. You're trying to restrict the function or how I use it? Don't do that.
Well, also, they say that you can only use it if you have a medical condition. Pregnancy is a medical condition.
Right. Hello? Having a vagina is a medical condition that they're trying to tax originally.
Yeah.
This is a vag tax.
And I think it's really important to note, like, yes, it's amazing that these grad students were, and students in general, the students who signed the petition, the students who did the protest, were informed and spoke out about it. But also to these two Notre Dame students who joined this lawsuit, I mean, having your name in a lawsuit like that, you can be, especially when you're at a private institution, you could be dragged. Like, you could face some serious consequences. And one of the students, I read a quote from her, said, you know, I feel really uncomfortable saying that I use this for anything other than pregnancy prevention. I'm going to be honest about that. And you should support me in that because that helps me achieve equity. That helps me continue my education. If this is an educational institution, birth control allows me to continue my education and, you know, achieve my career goals that I want to achieve. And you should support me in that and not try to hamper that with these antiquated and stupid know, legislation, essentially.
And you have students who aren't Catholic who attend your university. So it's like you can't legislate morality on campus. It's ridiculous, and it puts students in a position where they do have to out these things that are very private.
Right. Yeah, it is something that is yes, oftentimes considered private, but I also think that it can be something that is not as stigmatized. Like, I think it's important to come forward and be like, oh no, I use, you know, birth control for not having babies so that I can still have sex. Like, that's okay to say. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't be like, oh no, I use it for my acne. And if you do use it for your acne, great, that's good for you. But you can also use it to not have babies. That's still okay.
You can use it for all of those things.
Accepting of that.
You don't want acne or a baby. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it can be.
I don't want either.
These are just the times when you just go, what year is it?
Yeah.
If this was 1992, it would I'd still be shocked if people were trying to take away birth control.
Yeah.
Like, this is 2017 now, and only for the next few months, and it's going to be 2018. How is this a thing? I think Notre Dame was real confident. They got their football teams winning again. Mm. They're like, what else? What can we do now that we're on a roll? Take away birth control. And then people got them out. But if they lose to Miami this weekend, they're going to take the birth control away again.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously I think this is great for the Notre Dame students and for the Notre Dame employees. But also I think this is important for students around the country who may feel powerless when these sorts of legislations are enacted on a nationwide level or a statewide level or just from your university or whatever it may be. But you do have the power. I mean, look at these students who petitioned and protested. You do have the power to enact change. And really, really quickly. I mean, look at that. This was a week ago, and they enacted change within a week.
But I do understand where Notre Dame's coming from, because their whole religion is based on an unexpected pregnancy.
Oh,
just saying.
Oh, all right, guys, that is it for our show today. Stay tuned for the post game if you are a member. Otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow. Bye bye.